A little bit of my own work this evening, increase my volume on that end. Is okay at this point?
It's fine for me. I can
do that. Okay. So, then I'm onward. Actually, I actually can go back approaching 40 years at this point when I was literally standing in my dormitory in room at the U.S. Naval Academy and had some intelligence speak to me out loud. And it kind of broke open, to say the least, the glorious perception and understanding that there's more to the world than the normal consciousness at that time was providing me information and answers to. And that illumination of consciousness, that voice from even other realms, spoke to me on several occasions and fundamentally assisted me in changing my life direction tremendously. And told me that there are other worlds out there, and really assisted me in wanting to explore those other worlds and those other realms of consciousness. In that process, a very dear friend handed me a bag of food as a Christmas gift and that, I don't know how many years ago it was, that also was working 35 or 40 years ago. And I began to find the bag of food, knowing nothing about it. It was a random with two scales, so it had no commonality to standard music, and it required me to trust my own intuitive processes of learning and playing it. Now, I'm not one of the many people who knew about the bag of food back in 1970 or 72. And it took me on a journey into connecting with a lot of people of other cultures as I just simply walked down the street with the bag of food hanging on my back across my shoulder. Somebody said, "Wow, what is that?" Or, "Wow, I want to build a role with this one." "Wow, I play a new music. When you come join us?" And it just started this little barrage of community with other people working with sound of other cultures. And it inspired me to learn about the music of other cultures. And I played with Indian musicians and African musicians and musicians of many other populations, finding that there is a deeply spiritual foundation to the music of other cultures. And I saw the creative healing practice back then that I was intuitively guided, but I really had no mentors and I didn't understand what I was doing, and ended up becoming a bamboo flute maker instead. And even today, I still make flute, so that is a very small part of my practice at this point. But through making flutes, I learned a lot about musicality and tonality and voicing and scales and the music of other cultures, and also about intuitive progression into bringing forward music from a feeling state. And along the way, I met some really giants in South Union Field at that time. They were really early pioneers, such as Dr. Molly Scott and Sarah Benson. And I studied with them and learned some key aspects of how to use sound in therapy, and learned how to articulate some of what I was experiencing with sound. Again, I had found a way to articulate those things. It also helped me find community with like-minded people, both exploring the nature of healing and of the inner states of well-being and the use of sound therapeutically as well. From that time, I began to build a private practice and had some deeper inner awakenings that also helped me come forward with some of the information that had been revealed to me to begin the teaching practice. And I did both of those things for a number of years. I had a personal experience with a personal loss, and it was the greatest moment of my life that took me into very deep inner journeys of my own healing, and also allowed me to take a sabbatical from teaching or practicing. And during that sabbatical, I'm like, it's kind of grateful to have found natural earth sites and discovered also ancient ceremonial sites in the Northeast, and learned to work with the consciousness of the earth and of the spiritual wisdom keepers of some of those ancient sites, and that shifting my practice to a very earth-based Ben Shepherd and Michelle Foster came out and visited my work, and they became inspired and started this network of folks up in the North Shore of Austin at the New England Counties and Research Institute. They invited me out to practice there, and eventually invited me to become the Director of Education for that, and that became the founding network, which we are now co-directors of, along with Mary Kumpfer. Cheryl has stepped down as a director and is on our advisory board. But that's who we are at the Sound Healing Network, also as far as my perspective of that goes. In the course of things, in my early practice, I studied with a few other teachers and did a lot of programs and workshops and contact with indigenous owners of other cultures, and really a wide variety of teachers of many modalities of healing and of the consciousness movement. And each of them gave me some key piece of work that has inspired me to move me in particular directions. But there's been about four or five primary teachers in my life. And early on, one of those primary teachers was very shamanically based in her work and taught me a lot about the aspects of trauma and how healing needs to involve embedded objects and emotions that have not been resolved within emotional states. And I began exploring the sound practice a lot of it, also intuitively guided and working privately with individuals and focused a lot upon trying to clear their energy fields and then reestablish a connection to a deeper light source, we might say. Throughout my time in the sound practices, I've evolved a lot into working more purely with states of consciousness and working to find one's own innate being and honoring that inherent divinity within us, which we all hold as children of creation. And in my private practice, it's really more about just utilizing sound to create fields of transformational vibratory experiences that connects people into those inner worlds of deep well-being and assisting them in finding those illuminated states of their self. I do that more in group work than in individual work at this time, utilizing esoteric practices of a variety of special tools that I've both studied and that can have been then given guidance with from the inner world. Right now, a lot of that focuses on Egyptian mystery schools proposed. That is how I'm working with on the inner planes. Gilbert also has been a good role to work with Peruvian teachings late in my life. So, in my own work helping others, it's primarily in transformational workshops with groups. Now, the other part of it is having built this school, Sound Healing, which I teach people how to utilize sound in different aspects of practice for therapeutic application primarily. So as it turns out, most of the people involved in the training find that their own inner work becomes so illuminated and so much a part of the process that they find that that's at least as important, if not more important, than the learning of sound healing practices itself. So I developed this three-year program and began with 8 three-day weekends a year to start the program. And what I want to do tonight is just offer time to those of you that are online to ask questions you have about how sound might be used and better facilitate them in our practice. So I could sit here and speak. My first year training is over 24 days now, so it would be easy for me to sit here and fill in an hour of time just talking about the sound and how I use it. But I'm going to give you a little bit of a compilation of how I've evolved to where I am now and see what questions there are about sound, the nature of sound, how you use it in practice, or specifically what you're doing in your practice now and how you might better utilize or better develop a particular skill. So Mary, at this time, let me just open at the college and see what questions there are, and we'll take it from there. And if people don't have questions, I can keep talking for a long time.
Maybe. Thanks so much, Kaya. Wonderful. I'm going to remind everybody that if you have
questions out there? Stay with it. There are several times a day, or at least one extended time during the day. intersected in so many ways, among them coming into alignment with that aspect of consciousness which the Mother of Divine Interaction holds for us. Using instruments is another great way to play the play with sound. And if I don't know what I'm doing yet, just finding some several instruments, like one really important and useful instrument in this main time is the crystal ball. A lot of people love them and use them. The crystal ball has a unique powerful resonance, and most people working in the sound field know that. There may be those that don't that are listening. But learning about crystal balls, the different sizes and styles, how they are folded or placed on the ground, the resonant quality of small American crystals, and different pitches, I might say to the sound healing community, one thing that's beneficial from my perspective is not worry about a lot of different pitches of the crystal balls. There's a lot of people that will sell you at least 7, if not 12 crystal balls, because they say you need one at least for every chakra. And every sound healer I've ever worked with usually has one or two crystal balls and are very, very impactful with that one or two crystal ball. That's all you need when you utilize awareness and intention in appropriate ways. Having a whole bunch of balls can be beneficial and can help people come into balanced states through chakras and so forth. Utilizing one ball, one pitch per chakra. The reality is there's a whole bunch of chakra tone systems out there in the world, and they all work. So it's not about one musical system working with the chakras is the only way to use sound. There are many systems, and each of them, if you work with them diligently, can be very profoundly moving so far as creating a strong balance within the chakra energy system. But using a ball creates a drone, a musical field, a sound field, which enables me to go more deeply into a quiet place within my own awareness and then draw sounds out of that. And I might just add some intuitive tones to the sound in the crystal ball, the E and the ball that I'm playing right now. Add sound techniques along with meditative imaging guided visualization type of techniques, maybe even sense as wellness at an even greater rate. So learning about face of wellness, learning about simple practices of awareness can assist a great deal in creating a sound practice. That was a long answer to a short question.
That was great. Thank you.
I wouldn't say that I have observed that, and I think that's a great observation, and I understand the observation. I know that there are a lot of people, especially the trauma survivors, who learned the technique of eating their bodies just to survive significant ongoing recurring trauma in their lives. Many of us as children experience that, and it's a kind of a standard survival mechanism. And if we haven't resolved the trauma with which we hold within our body and our consciousness, then we may wish to continue that escape mechanism of leaving the body. But I don't find that beneficial if it's to not face our current life situation. I think leaving the body can be a tremendous tool for gaining understanding of other realms of consciousness for short periods of time, and that's perfectly legitimate in shamanic practices and other practices of spiritual traditions. Journeys into the other world where it can be a standard aspect of spiritual tradition. But to be able to avoid my circumstance, to avoid healing which is wishing to occur, to avoid remembrance of traumatic situations, is not necessarily a beneficial thing, and I would encourage them to move their awareness into those places seeking healing within the body to assist to release and allow the sounds to sink in there. Let the sounds be, say you're playing crystal ball, well, why doesn't this be a play when you're doing your work? Okay. So have them play some crystal balls and ask them to sink into the sound field like a bath. Bathe in the sound, let your body bathe in it, and invite them to come into the sounds, to sink into them, to receive them, to bathe in them, let them cascade down over their bodies like a soothing waterfall. Create imagery that will assist them to embody the sound and to embody their own awareness, and then that will enable them to find points for release of that trauma that may be creating their desire to escape. But at the same time, you need to be ready to handle that trauma when it emerges, because it can be outrageous. And if we don't have the tools to face it, it can be frightening to the practitioner. That's one thing that I try to bring a lot of awareness to in the practices, is to help people to learn how to hold space for people that are breaking down. And one of the best ways to be able to hold that space is to ensure that we have passed through our own traumas. So in my own practices, that is part of the practice, is to learn how to face our own fears, our own pains, our own wounds, so that when someone else breaks down in front of us, we can hold the space with care and compassion to allow them a safe way to open up and explore their own needs, their own wounds, and so forth.
Well, can you use
do what's called for in any given time. Now, to go back to some of my early explanations about my earlier practice, I began working with people who really focus a lot upon the heavy energies, the negative wounding, the I don't want to use the word negative energies, but that's what was used, the negative energies that we hold in our bodies. And what I found is that there is the potential of over-focusing on the trauma and reinforcing the trauma or the guilt or the suffering or the self-pity or victimization. I go, well, with me, I've been so mistreated in my life, and it continues to have this partner today that's still mistreating me. And we bathe in the self-pity rather than restoring goodness and wholeness within us. So I just want to make a point to that, and that's something else we could spend a long time talking about. But in my own practice, this is what occurred. This was the most beneficial moment for me in my own learning curve. I was involved with some very, very intense energies, and I had to learn how to ensure safety for my family at a psychical level, and especially for my children. I was very deeply involved in negative psychic energies. I was trying to learn how to protect my family from them, to clear them from the house and garage fields and things like that. And I was using a lot of personal energy, and I knew something was not correct. I came to my teacher, who is the most profound spiritual being, and said, what is it I'm doing wrong? What do I need to see differently in order to keep my family safe? And she said, be a pure mind. And that's all she said. That was an entire session. That will be $110, please. But it has been worth tens of thousands of dollars in my life because it completely shifted my perception from focusing on the duality, the pain, the negativity, to nothing but the light. And when you focus on the light, you shed the skin of darkness over and over, and you don't have to worry about anything. And when you turn on the light, the darkness flees. And we're not talking about the darkness in terms of the loving womb of the Divine Mother, in which there is this very deep, dark receptacle that Westerners in general are afraid of, and men especially are afraid of. That's not the darkness we're speaking of. But when you shed the skin of fear of other forces in your life, and you focus on the purity and clarity of the highest, most benevolent energies, new things occur. And for me, it's much better things that have occurred. And it allows me to come into my own higher clarity, and that assists me to bring others into their highest clarity. So that one point did more for me than perhaps any other teaching in my life. Be of pure mind. Yes.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for joining us. So thank you to Diana. That was quite profound. And, wow, I just begin our days
differently. Amen. Oh, wow, we start in a month.
Yeah,
too, Marianne, and what that is that what I'm calling the illumination consciousness, and it's the next phase of the work, really, I believe, for all of us. I believe that as a planet, we are coming to this point of tremendous human evolution, and the prophecies of culture after culture after culture speak about it, from our standard Western traditions to the least known tribes of indigenous cultures worldwide. Over and over, wisdom keepers of indigenous peoples are stepping forward at this time and for especially the last 20 to 30 years, saying there is a time coming which there is tremendous potential for humanity to make a major shift in our consciousness and how we do things upon this planet and with this planet, how we hold relationship with each other. And our culture, for thousands of years, has known the markers for that time. And these are the markers, and these are the times. I work with a lot of indigenous teachers and those that haven't gone to olwenau.org. Check it out. Those that occasionally have some of those orders of mine and Algonquin and Olmec and other teachings who share with us their people's prophecies, and they're all telling us exactly the same thing. This new consciousness is emerging. Many of us in what we have been calling the New Age field, many people shy away from that term now, but in this new consciousness that has emerged in Western society, embrace that very much and know that something is a shift and glow. But what I'm trying to suggest to people now is look at the end result. Look at what you think is going to happen in this shift. And imagine that that is happening or has happened now. So I'm talking a lot about 2012, and there are other prophecies that say this is the time. It's already occurred. And all we're doing now is just catching up to the shift in consciousness. But look at what you think is meant to occur. What is your state of consciousness supposed to be when you come into an awakened, illumined state? And what's the difference between that and what you're experiencing on a daily state now? And what can you do to help create that shift? In the end, all you can do is go into a state of wholeness. All the steps that you take, in the end, all you can do is claim your power. You can do all the other things in between, and it doesn't really matter. In the end, you have to be whole. In the end, you have to be in yourself, fully present, here and now, in your full power. So why not start doing that now, rather than waiting until 2012 or 2036, or whatever you think it should be occurring? Do it now. Be it now. Be the product of what you hope to plant in the coming years. Be that now. Be the seed that you want to reap in the future, so that you're much more likely to reap it.
Well,
let me speak a little bit. If anybody has another question, just interrupt me. Don't find it as an
open.
No, I don't mind. So there's several pieces of that I may be able to hold long enough for address. But foremost among them would be to look at the wisdom teachers of other cultures, of all cultures, that you must respect. And in my own life, two pronounced teachers, that would be Yeshua and Buddha. And to me, they are perfect examples of human potential, living fully in the present. And they, among the many ancient holy ones of the many cultures, we tend to say that the most that one can do is be in one's true self, to radiate as much light into the world as possible. What more can one do than that? To me, that's really the answer to the question. If I pretend to the darkness, if I keep paying focus to the darkness, I'm fundamentally am paying it homage. I'm giving it wealth. I'm giving it life. I'm giving it my life force. I'm adding belief to it. I'm adding power to it. When I focus on the power of the presence, when I focus on the power of the internal light, I create the radiance within myself, and nothing has power over it. There's specific tools that we do in the Egyptian practices that activate this aspect of consciousness, which is one's fundamental self. It's called the Bala, and it's the highest aspect of our individual consciousness. When we activate this aspect of consciousness, we come into power, innate power within ourselves, because we activate the dominion of ourself. And when we do that, we come into harmony with divine law. When we do that, we are living within divine law. And in divine law, nothing has power over me unless I give it power. So nothing has any force over me if I'm living in my true dominion. And that's the type of practice that we speak to most often. I won't deny the darkness of humanity. I won't deny what appears as deep evil and atrocity in humanity. But if I focus on that, I'm going to give it greater and greater witness and greater life force. And if I focus on that which is truly light, truly holy, truly well, then I'm going to bring about greater states of wellness for all of humanity. If I could, though, rather than getting into just speaking about consciousness in those aspects, I'd like to try to tie it back to some aspects of sound and consciousness. Because sound works so well, even with these concepts, and maybe especially with these concepts. In my own work, I perform something that I call sacred sound transmissions, and there are probably multitudes of people doing it, but the only people that I've come in contact with in my own life who do it in ways that I'm familiar with are Tom Finian and Kevin Michael. Kevin Michael happens to be on our advisory board, and Tom Finian was one of the most highly respected sound healers anywhere. And they fundamentally, what I term sacred sound transmissions is attenuating our awareness to sacred states of consciousness into the holy beings that reside there and directing them. And when you do that, it becomes the most profound experience of sound healing that I have seen. And I've seen a lot of sound healing. I've seen tremendous power of sound utilized in a wide number of ways. I have the greatest respect for all of them, but I haven't seen anything that affects human consciousness and human wellness in the same way. Because it's like the heavens raining down upon us when we use the sacred sound in this manner. And it's the mainstay of my own practice at this point, attenuating awareness to sacred states of consciousness and to the holy beings that reside therein. And drawing their voice through my voice, seeking to surrender enough to those states of consciousness that my voice can become a vehicle for their voice. And it's profoundly moving for the individual practicing it, but it's also profoundly moving to those that experience it. And it maybe takes some of the most advanced work, and yet just by focusing upon love, just upon love or peace or any coherent emotion, which is probably something we might talk about also, focusing on any coherent emotion, that being that which is beneficial to one's life force and one's state of wellness versus incoherent emotions which diminish our state of wellness. By focusing on any coherent emotion and discounting it, we can affect change in humanity. And we can do this very simply in our practice. This is when we bring awareness and intention into the practice in very real ways. So if there's someone laying on the table in our room, I don't know what to do. They've told us their story, but we're not getting how to work with them, perhaps. If I have no other clues, I can the momentarily coherent emotions such as gratitude or deep or universal states of love and just start voicing them. And maybe I can ask everybody to unmute their phones and let's just try it together and see if we can do that for a few moments here. I invite anybody who wants to join me when it's on my bowl.
So just
breathe awareness into your heart. You might want to sit in an upright way if you can, or if you are at this time or lay comfortably. And just breathe awareness into the heart. Maybe the next few exhales, just sigh on the exhale, releasing any tension or obstruction or awareness that's in the body. Just sigh deeply on the exhale.
Thank you.
somebody does it on a conference call with horse, I have no idea how effective it is. And I hope that it's beneficial for all of us. Questions or comments?
I am.
Thank you so much. I have a couple of closing comments. Could you mention to us when your upcoming trainings are and if you want to get a website for requesting more information?
Well, the only website that you need for my trainings is thecenterofmight.net. That's thecenterofmight.net. And you'll find a multitude of links there at the top of the front page, but one of the primary ones is the School of Sound Healing. And if you click on that link, you'll see information on the 3-year program on offer. And the level one, what I call the beginners or foundation training, begins September 21st through 23rd. I hesitate calling it the beginner or foundation level training because most people find it's not their beginner level, but yet beginners are not lost in it. I have people who come into my practice and say, I've been doing sound healing for 17 years, and I've never seen or heard anything like this. So I don't think you'll be disappointed whenever your skill level is. It's designed to allow your own skills to complement the program for you, and you will get out of it when you're ready to receive. At least that's what the vast majority of people who attend them find. And the first program, I tend to outlay a great explanation about the nature of sound and healing and how we might explore it. And then over the next 7 practices, over 7 months, 1 week and a month, I explore more deeply the use of healing instruments, the neurophysiology of sound, and how sound impacts us at a physiological level. And then how to use the voice and the clarity of intention with that. The energetic components of the human field, attuning the chakras, creating sacred space, and why that is important to one's practice in life, both livelihood and personal life. And then sacred tone transmissions. And the lot of practices, application kind of tying it all together and really seeing how to use a strong applied field in your own practice. The second year we go on and move from that. And the third year students I'm working with now is very interesting. I thought that they wanted to go more deeply into therapeutic application. They found out that what they really want to do is learn how to work with energies that are psyched and not. And do earth energy, so earth energy healing. So that year class where we designed to work more specifically with doing earth ceremonies. And we just spent 3 days out in sacred times doing that, and it was profoundly moving for everybody. So you can find a lot of specific information about it there. If you'd like to ask questions, if you just call our offices or email us off the site, you can find those passages.
Great. Thanks so much. And I just want to close tonight. Firstly, I'm thanking you guys for your generosity, not only for tonight's call, but just for the human knowledge in general. And, being a person who is working directly with you. And then on the board, I see a lot of the work that's going on behind the scenes that you all don't see, that's the kind of guy. And it's all volunteer and it's paid for. And I just want to amaze your commitment and your passion and your generosity for all of us. And I especially want to thank you for all of your work with our monthly teleconference broadcast for these kind of calls as well as the public calls that you are arranged and graciously with us. You know, and not for. So, I would love to reserve a call and just
like get our newsletters and our on-site information for events to see our next teleconference, which is coming up Tuesday, September 25th with Freddie Silva. And Freddie is a remarkable and unique human being who has a deep, visceral understanding of the nature of sacred sites, sacred geometries, how they've been used in the cathedrals of the world and other ancient temples. He has an extraordinary understanding of the nature of crop circles. And the star information in sites and science today, as it sounds, is a profoundly important aspect of how crop circles are created. The information coming through from crop circles is extraordinary, and it's remarkable how much this incredible body of information is being ignored by humanity, by the news media, and so forth, in part because there literally aren't government interventions trying to create disbelief in the crop circles. When you know the entire story, it's an absolutely remarkable what is going on there. But these amazing features showing up right next door to some of the most ancient, most profound found stone sites in the world, in England, worldwide now. Also, there's more crop circles in the United States than in any other country in the world currently. Even though most of them are out west and most people don't know anything about it. But this gentleman knows all about it and has as deep of an understanding of how they're made, what the geometries represent, the incredible wisdom embodied in these picture books, and has a lot to share with us, so I'll come and take a listen in a month on September 25th. Thank you all for joining tonight. I'm very grateful.